This is I'm Listening, presented by Riverbend Community Health and Choices NH Addiction Recovery Services. Riverbend wants you to know the treatment works. For information, check out riverbendcmhc.org. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the show today. And we're honored to be joined on the program by CEO and President of Riverbend Community Mental Health. She is Lisa Madden. Lisa, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you today?
I'm also well. Appreciate you joining us for the show. And on Tuesday, we had the first vaccination take place in the Granite State. It was down at Elliott Hospital in Manchester. This after 12,000 of the doses of the vaccine came to the Granite State on Monday. And it's been interesting to gauge the reaction of folks about the vaccine. For some, they are extremely excited. The vaccine is here, and this means that they're going to get to start their lives once again in many circumstances. They get to travel. They get to go to concerts. And they're seeing the end, the light at the end of the tunnel. For others, there's a wait-and-see approach about the vaccine and like, well, let's see what happens. And, for some, they do not want to get the vaccine. And UNH had a poll that they put out on Monday and indicated that 67%, the overwhelming majority of the state, were going to get the vaccine. However, 33% were not going to get it or probably not going to get it. So what are your takeaways in regards to the spectrum of reaction to the vaccine arriving in the Granite State this week?
Yeah, so what a varied approach everyone is going to have to this, and a different range of emotions people will feel. And for a lot of people, there's a tremendous sense of relief that there is a tangible thing that they can do that will help change their experience, right? I mean, they have not been able to go out. They have not been able to engage in the social activity that really helps them feel good and give them some relief. And this is something that will give them that opportunity to be able to re-engage in some social activities that they hadn't been able to do before. But there's a lot of anticipatory anxiety around that. There's just not enough information that people have to know about the long-term impact. I mean, if you look back on the development of vaccines, and those of us who have had vaccines for decades now, there's just more information to help people feel, to help guide their decision than what it is available right now. And there's fear. I mean, we have seen so much hardship and so many people be sick and really very, very sick that there's fear that that something bad could come out of the vaccine. And there's philosophical approaches to any kind of vaccine that, is certainly everyone's prerogative to have. But I think really what I'm seeing is that it's really the anxiety of the unknown and that fear that comes with the unknown. And maybe that will abate over time as more people are able to have the vaccine and there's more evidence about whether there is or is not any kind of dramatic side effects that people should worry about. And that's what we have to wait and see. There is a wait-and-see element of this. But I can understand that there's a lot of anxiety around it. I do believe myself that their work that went into some of the science of developing this, there's people who are much smarter than me that have done the work to prepare us with this vaccine. And I'm grateful for all that they've done and hopeful that it has the outcome that they anticipate.
Yeah, I think you make a really good point, because one of the major concerns about the vaccine is, well, it's been rushed. It has come so quick. It was done by Operation Warp Speed. And, therefore, for some reason, it has, not hit the appropriate markers in regards to safety. And, I think, as I've said before, that it is very clear that Pfizer and the federal and state governments have put their reputations on the line. And if there is an ineffectiveness in regards to this or immediate side effects up front that are abnormal, they are going to have a significant reputation suffering as a result of that. So I don't think that's going to take place. In other words, I think that they have so much skin in the game. But the concern is, well, what if something happens down the line? And when you start to deal with that aspect of, you know, the mental makeup of people, you know, that's where kind of the, you know, the conspiracy type of stuff and, you know, the unknown, the anticipatory anxiety sets in, because, you know, we don't know, because it is just you know, coming to market now, what would happen, say, 2, 5, 10, 20 years down the road.
Yeah, and it's true, and we don't know. And certainly, as not being a physician, I can't speak to the medical component, but I can speak to what the fears, how the fears manifest. And some of this we have to own about how it's promoted throughout, either through a political perspective or through the media's perspective, or anything along that line that really may get in the way of people trying to think through what works best for them. And you're right. There's no argument, or no one who can say it's not true, that this has been fast. You know, that there's no. Of course, it has. It's been, the pandemic has been a really horrible past year for everyone. And you know, it comes back to what your personal beliefs are relative to having confidence in the science and having confidence in the skills and the intelligence and the knowledge that, you know, decades of immunizations bring to this particular one. And that's what people need to kind of think through and say, okay, what are the things that need to happen in order to have a successful immunization process? Have we met some of those thresholds or enough to feel confident in it? And then, therefore, what's your choice and what's your decision? But there's no denying the pace of everything that's occurred in the past year, not only the learning of this illness, then the profound loss of life that's have occurred, and now the hope and intent that we're putting onto a vaccine that will bring us back to our norm. And really wanting that to be the truth and dealing with the uncertainty of what long-term impacts would be. You know, and again, we won't know that. The decision people get to make is whether they want to wait that out and see what those effects are, or if they choose to have the vaccine and to see if there's benefit for them for choosing to have it.
Yeah,
it's such a hard call.
It is.
Yeah.
Two things off of that. One, you know, I think that it is important that individuals, you know, get vaccinated, but I certainly understand the personal decision side of things. The second piece is that the vaccine has been sold as kind of a silver bullet that's going to end COVID, and that's not entirely true for two reasons,
right.
Unfortunately. One is that, you know, just because you have gotten the vaccine, you are immune to COVID, but, and this is a big but, it's still unknown how long you are immune for.
That's right.
So you may have to get the vaccine again. So that's an important piece. And also, you are immune, but you also can still spread asymptomatically. So
right.
The vaccine is an important piece, but you know, it has been sold as kind of being this silver bullet. Again, I will be getting the vaccine as soon as I can, because I want to resume life and I want to see other individuals do so. I want my get out of COVID free card so that I can, you know, resume what I have come to know as a life. So that being said, though, I think that those pieces of information are really important, that it's not a silver bullet per se.
Right. Our behaviors won't change in the short term. We still need to do the same things that have been proven to be effective to contain the spread, and that's wear a mask, obviously, hand washing, social distancing. That's not going to change the day you get a shot. That's not going to change for several months until we can really make sure that everyone who chooses to get the shot does get the shot. And that's when we really will start to have some of our options increase about what we get to do socially. I mean, that is absolutely the truth. This isn't, you know, it's interesting. I was just having this conversation with my father this morning and saying, you know, the fact that, 12,000 people yesterday got the shot does not mean this went away. It means that 12,000 people got the first round and there's a long way to go. And we can't kid ourselves to think that it's over now. And we have to just, and so therefore our own self-care to being able to tolerate this process is really a lot of what we're hearing here in our practice and here at Riverbend, is how do we take care of you and support you through this process so that we can get through it and deal with some of those fears and deal with some of that anxiety about this unknown, so that you can make the best decision for you that's based on rational thought, that's based on good information and good evidence, and get a little bit away from emotional decisions. Because that's what I think gets in the way of us, our next steps.
Lisa, what have you been your thoughts on the collective mindset of society in this, you know, second surge, really, you know, you might say the first surge of COVID-19 here in New Hampshire, because to be honest, you know, most people did not know anybody who had COVID-19 during the the first time period and lockdown of the spring. But now everybody knows somebody, and in fact, probably multiple people, families who have been dealing with COVID-19, and some who obviously have lost their lives, most notably Speaker Hinch, sure. And the situation, you know, surrounding that over the past week. So that is different for folks, but still, there are people that want to gather. I mean, we all see the pictures on social media of people getting together indoors, having holiday parties, having Thanksgiving, yeah. And they're continuing to, you know, to move forward with their lives and not being all that cognizant of what's taking place, you know, with the COVID cases increasing. And as we are, you know, hailing and noting the historic nature of the vaccine arriving in New Hampshire, we're also seeing rises in cases. And we are looking ahead to a mid-January time period where it's expected to be, you know, the peak of cases. So we're still rising towards that peak. But meanwhile, there's this good news and individuals are kind of fatigued by COVID. There's a cognizance on my part of whenever I mention COVID on this show or others, that, you know, there's going to be people that, oh, let's see what's on a music station. Let's see what's on my Pandora right now, right. You know, as opposed to having to hear about this again.
Yeah. So the past year has been nothing short of tragic, and people have been traumatized beyond what we will even know. And that's part of what we'll see the residual of for years to come, is the tragedy and the trauma of the past year. But we can't put ourselves into this concept of denial that it's not true, or that it's not real, and that it's all gone. We have to still stay in the present and know that this is still a pandemic. This is still something that is actually happening. People are getting very, very sick, and people are dying. So what can we do to be able to make sure that we don't contribute to that loss, that we don't contribute to the spread, and that we take ownership for our own behavior to be part of the solution to this issue and not a contributor to the spread? And that's the basic facts. That's what people need to be able to do, is to be able to say, I have a responsibility to my friends and my family and my coworkers and my neighborhood and my community to not contribute to the cause or the problem, but to be part of the solution. And again, it doesn't mean that people aren't incredibly sad and aren't really lonely and feeling so isolated. Those are all powerful feelings. So what we need to be able to do is find a way to support each other. And yes, we are struggling with constant Zoom meetings or FaceTime or anything. It's just not as fulfilling as it is to actually have a gathering. But our choices are limited right now. And if we make good choices now, we will have better choices in the near future. And that's really what we're just trying to empower people to say, you do have some control here. This isn't all happening to you. This is something that you are part of. So how can we make sure you're supported to make good decisions?
I was having a conversation with a woman the other day, and you know, she had kids who were 16, 12, and 8. And she said, Chris, the last year has been stolen from my children.
Absolutely.
And I hadn't really thought about it that way. You know, I thought I'm kind of like, put your head down and kind of just get things done and, you know, move from day to day. And because I don't like to over, you know, dramatize things. But when I started to think about it, I'm like, she's right. I'm like, yeah, I mean, there have been good parts of it. But for the most part, you know, they have not been able to be kids. And I have kids who are, you know, 10 and 8. And mm-hmm. I started to, you know, to think about that. So how do you approach this last year, in your view, from a mental perspective? Is talk a little about self-care. I want to get to holiday stress as well. But how do you approach it from a mental perspective? Is it, should you try to, you know, bury it as I am and move mm-hmm. forward and to not think about the lost vacations and the lost you know, graduations and events and, you know, being able to go to amusement parks and all those things that you do with your kids? Because the time with our kids is so short and the time that they're a certain age. So is it, do you lament on that? Do you focus on that? Do you bury it? How do you address that?
Well, you know, the therapist in me would say burying it isn't going to help, because it's going to come back and it's going to come back even more problematic than it maybe it started with. I think that you do need to recognize it, you need to honor it, and you need to own it. So, you know, my experience is, you know, I have a 20-year-old son. He's missed out on a year and a half of on-campus college time, three baseball seasons, and endless other things I probably don't even want to know about. But, you know, there's that loss. And the conversation that I've had with him over the past year or so is that there's nothing that can give you that back. But what have you been able to gain from that? What is there any positive that you've had that you can kind of, you know, build a little bit around? And to just recognize and acknowledge that this is really hard and it really is a loss. And I'm sorry that this is happening to you. But to really have an open conversation about it and to make, you know, some people talk about different things like vision boards and things that they do. It's very helpful to try to think of, excuse me, what would you like to do next? When we have different choices, what would you like to do? What is your vision for what's going to come next summer? Where would you like to be able, you know, do you want to have a pool party? Do you want to go to a certain place? What is it that you want to do? And sometimes just making those vision boards to be able to see this is what our future is going to look like gives people some hope, especially for younger kids. And, well, actually for anybody. I mean, I have adults that do this all the time. But younger kids get to be able to look at it as a symbol of some hope for the future. But it's important to acknowledge that this is a difficult time because what you're building in your kids and what we're building in everybody is resiliency. You're teaching them ways in which to be able to cope with adversity because this won't be the only difficult experience of their life, but it is their current difficult experience.
That is Lisa Madden joining us here on the program. She is the president and CEO of Riverbend Community Mental Health. This is I'm Listening, and we're going to transition a little bit here into the holiday time period. And you know, generally, it's been interesting to listen to folks talk about their Thanksgiving and Christmas experience. And to some, they have lamented the loss of time with family. To others, they've been like, wow, this is the best thing that ever happened. I stayed at home. I made my own turkey. I didn't have any in-laws. It was phenomenal. We just had them in on a video for like 20 minutes. It was the best thing that ever happened. There was no stress. You know, for the holiday season, there's a lot of stressors that we put on ourselves to buy presents for everybody and to try to make time to get to as many places as possible. And those stresses, to a large degree, have been removed this holiday season. But there's the, you know, additional stress, as you mentioned before, of if you have young kids, you know, it's been really sad to see some of the, you know, the mall Santa pictures where like Santa's in a bubble.
The kids are
on the outside, or it's been pretty strange and bizarre. And so that is the holiday and Christmas, you know, is changed for kids. So how do you evaluate, you know, the holiday stress in the COVID-19 environment?
Well, I mean, I think you make some really, really good points. I mean, folks who haven't we have this real challenge often around the holidays is we very much want to see the people that we care about. We very much want to see family and friends and enjoy that. But it makes for a very stressful schedule. It makes for a really hard, how do you make sure you get everywhere so nobody feels left out or you don't feel like you're missing out? And that's sometimes impossible to pull off, and what you mainly get is tired. So we are finding different ways to do that. And some folks are finding it really relieving that it takes away from a lot of those dynamics that are exhausting and challenging. And sometimes, you know, people get really angry. But the loss itself is really important to recognize, and it is important to find other ways to do it so that there's not a sense of disconnection from those people that are important to you. But this is a temporary separation. It doesn't have to be permanent. However, if there's things that you learned about this and you learned about during this time that works for you and works for your family so that you are, in fact, happier and healthier, then there's nothing that says you can't continue to do that if that's really what works. But the littles, you know, the young ones who are trying to, you know, really understand how this changes the magic of Christmas for them, that must be every parent's challenge right now is how do you still make sure that they see this as being something to celebrate and something to enjoy, knowing that it's just so different. And you see lots of different things on other forms of social media about ways that they're trying to keep kids engaged and keep families engaged. And I keep repeating the same point of at least being able to own it with kids and acknowledge with kids, this is a very different year. That doesn't mean that Santa's not listening. It doesn't mean that there's not opportunity. There's just that it's different the way we're going to do it, and maybe next year we'll be able to do it different again. So it doesn't feel that it's just happening to them, but it's sort of a bigger issue. It's not unique to them. So they don't feel like they did anything wrong or they're being punished for anything. It's just the world is in a tough place right now and we need to get through it.
So you're saying you don't think it's a good idea for me to tell the kids that due to COVID that Santa is not going to be able to wrap the presents this year and just going to put it.
Yeah, I suggest that.
Yeah, all right, so we should. She's still gonna wrap the presents this year. I guess
Santa's still gonna have, Christmas Eve is gonna be just as busy for Santa this year as it has been every other year.
I was just thinking maybe a decorative bow in order to. It's been some problems getting the wrapping paper up there at the North Pole, and the elves don't want to be too touchy feely with things. But anyway,
may happen. That may be the story of your morning. I don't know.
As always, appreciate joining us for the show.
You bet. Have a great day. Happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays to you as well. That is Lisa Madden, President and CEO of Riverbend Can You Mental Health, joining us here on I'm Listening, presented by Riverbend Can You Mental Health and Choices NH Addiction Recovery Services. Riverbend wants you to know that treatment works.